Welcome to Thrive Deeper, the show based on the Thrive Bible reading guides. This is an ongoing conversation about God's Word with Thrive author, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
Matt, it's good evening this time. We're in the studio at night.
Yeah,
we're always coming in cold mornings, and so we're here tonight, and we're going to be continuing our journey in Proverbs.
Yeah, and we're tackling this in thematic form rather than working the book. And it's interesting, as I've said each episode, to note what are some of the main themes in this and in this book of Proverbs. And relationships, and I know that's a very general sort of topic, but it is one of the most common things. And in fact, we did an episode, Stu, on communication, on speech.
Yes, and
in a sense, that is actually also in, you know, in this area of relationships.
And well, it's so one of the things that makes us unique as human, as humans,
yeah, that's
in creation,
right.
that we can communicate
with
words. And we're not talking about birds and dogs that bark and tweet, but we actually
we're
very powerful. And so communication is a very important part of our relational skill.
But there are lots of proverbs about, you know, the different forms of relationships, and it speaks to the things that destroy relationships, the things that can create good relationships. It's not a relationship guide. It's classic proverbs. You know, there are these statements about, you know, sometimes just statements on the way that things are, you know, which is often you see the proverbs, just it's observations about the way that things usually work.
Yeah.
And
the experience of the writer.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's right. And so it talks about like friendships and the right kind of friendships, the wrong kind of friendships. There's a lot about honoring parents. It's interesting to note how common that is throughout the Proverbs. I found lots of Proverbs that talked about the importance of honoring parents. And I mean, that's, you know, it's one of the commandments, and it's a commandment that comes with a promise that, you know, honor your parents and it will go well with you, right?
That's right.
There's something about that that's really important. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot about conflict and strife and quarrels. And again, recognizing that this is a part of life, but also recognizing what are the things that lead to that as well. So there's some really rich stuff here in the Proverbs.
And I think just one more thing to remind listeners, these are not promises. You know, if you do this, then this will always happen. This is more principles. In other words, this is what normally happens in situations when they're raised like this. So they're principles that we can apply in life without a doubt, but they're not promises.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll start, Stu, with some of the Proverbs that talk about friendships. And of course, I mean, this is important, and the first proverb actually I want to quote from is Proverbs 12:26, which says, "The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray."
Yeah.
And there's a lot in Scripture, and even in the early part of Proverbs, warning against essentially hanging out with the wrong people.
Yep.
And I know this is it's a cliche now, but it's amazing how much we are shaped and influenced by the people that we spend most of our time with.
Yeah.
And so finding the right people to journey with is actually a really important aspect of walking the path that God wants us to walk. And the Proverbs is all about walking the way of wisdom. And one of the key things about walking the way of wisdom is that you should not walk it alone. You should walk it with people who are also committed to walking the way of wisdom. Not perfect, but people who are essentially committed to walking the same way with you.
Yeah.
So, you know, your closest relationships really should be with people that you're able to walk and journey with and that can support you and encourage you in that journey.
Now, I think important to say, though, when it says friends here, we're talking about people. A friend is someone who really knows you better than just an acquaintance. So we're not saying we shouldn't be reaching out to people who are lost in our city or whatever it might be. We're simply saying the people, as you just said, Matt, who were actually treating as friends, they need to be people that are on the same path as us. But it doesn't mean we don't go and try to reach to the people that are struggling with life and having all sorts of challenges.
So it's absolutely. That's right. It's not that we don't, we don't want to become an enclave.
That's right.
But, you know, again, we've got to be careful that we're not falling in with a,
that's right,
you know, with a group of people that end up, because it's an inevitable thing about human nature that we do become like the people that we
spend the most
time with, right? It's inevitable because we are what, I mean, I've heard human beings being described as hypersocial. We're not just social creatures, we're hypersocial creatures. And, you know, we define ourselves, understand ourselves, we navigate through life very much in connection with other people. And so the people that you spend time with, you imbibe their way of life, sometimes without even really knowing it. And so I think, you know, I mean, it's really important that we have relationships with a variety of different people. But I think our core supportive relationship, we need to be intentional about building friendships in our life that are going to support us in the way that we want to go. And so in Proverbs 13, verse 20, it says, "Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." So walk with the wise and become wise. And the idea there, if you walk with wise people, you will become wise.
Yeah.
You become like those that you walk with, essentially. Also here in Proverbs 22, "Do not make friends with a hot-tempered person. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn their ways and get yourself ensnared." Yeah. So, I mean, this is just an example of... And perhaps we can liken this to, you know, being with someone that's always very contentious and angry about things that are going on. And and you can end up, in a sense, imbibing that attitude towards life. You're always angered, entitled, you're always feeling ripped off. You're all, you know, we become like the people.
Cynical.
We become cynical.
And again, I think important to say, do not make friends. It's not saying do not be friendly with.
Yeah.
It's saying don't make them the people that you walk the path.
That's right. That's right. It's not saying don't, you know, don't cut off people. And I think because of the importance of friendships, therefore faithfulness in friendships is a really important aspect of this. So Proverbs 17, verse 17, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity." You know, friends aren't those who are just going to stick around when times are good. So Proverbs 19 says, "Wealth attracts many friends," and you could put that in inverted commas, you know, "but even the closest friend of the poor person deserts them." So that's a warning against, I think, the kind of friends that are friends in fair weather friends, so to speak. And so there's a lot in the Proverbs. And in fact, I mean, faithfulness, not only to God, but the people around us, you know, is really important. Virtue, really. So Proverbs 20, verse 6, "Many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find," you know, a faithful friend, right? Someone that will stand by you even when you get it wrong, when you fall over, that will be there to you know, to pick you up. And then Proverbs 25, verse 19, "Like a broken tooth or a lame foot is reliance on the unfaithful in a time of trouble." Again, it's knowing those people that you can depend on, you know what I mean? That are not just going to pull you down, but that are actually going to pull you up. You know, who are those people that you have in your life that can pull you up and be a support? We really need that.
Yeah.
That's
And those are people important. That are going to challenge us in our ways as well. And as you said earlier, if we find ourselves with people who aren't on the same path as us, it's unlikely they're going to challenge us. More likely we're going to be challenged by them and find ourselves drifting off onto whatever their path may be.
That's right.
Yeah, it's good.
And then there's this role of a friend. And I love the way that the Proverbs frames the role of true friendship. The very, you know, there's a very famous Proverbs 27 verse 6, "Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." It's I mean, it's a well-known proverb, and it's one of my favorites. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but the enemy multiplies kisses. And there's a warning here just against flattery. Like, your most faithful friend, we've talked about faithfulness, your most faithful friend actually isn't the one that just tells you whatever you want to hear. There is a, you know, I mean, Proverbs 27, "Better is open rebuke than hidden love." You want a friend that's going to be open, that's going to be honest with you. And if you can't maintain a friendship like that, you lose a lot.
Yes.
Totally. You know, you've got to invite a friendship like that, that's a truthful friendship, someone that can be honest with you. Because if they are honest with you and then you lash out at them, you're actually pushing away the kind of friendship that you need the most.
Yeah.
And this can actually be with your closest relationships. This can be parents. This can be your spouse. You know, one thing I know in marriage is that you're in my case, my wife knows things about me and sees things about me that other people won't pick up on and will point that out. And I've realized that this is so important for me. to respond to this.
Yeah.
Because if I'm always lashing out at that and responding negatively to that, I actually lose probably one of the most important things in the companionship that my marriage gives me.
Yeah.
And that is the kind of truthfulness. It's the wound from a friend, right? And I think we've really got to be intentional about welcoming. Now, wounds hurt,
yes,
right? But there are some wounds that are opening up things that need to be opened up. And I love the way it talks here about trust. Mm. There's a trust in that.
Mm.
You got to trust that this person knows you well enough.
And I was just going to say.
To be able to see those things. And even in fact, if they don't express it in ways that perhaps are even perhaps sensitive, I think it's always important.
Heart,
that's right. To recognize, no, actually, this person is my mirror. And it may not have been said tactfully or actually even, because no one's perfect, may not have even be said kindly, right? Mm. But what can I take from this? What can I see about myself in this? Because that is the most important thing. The people closest to us are our mirrors.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't like what we see, but when you don't like what you see in the mirror, don't smash the mirror. And I think this is really important principle here.
And there is just another side to that, if I can just flip that, and that is, it does say wounds from a friend can be trusted. I think it's important that we don't think we've got permission just to go to point out everyone else's faults. It's got to be in a position of relationship where they know they trust you and you know that you trust them.
Great point.
So we've got to, you know, that doesn't give us open slather to go and rebuke people because it won't be received well if there isn't a sense of relationship.
Exactly. Another way to put that is to ask yourself the question, is this the role that you have earned in this person's life, or
totally,
that you've been given by that person in their life? So you just need to be really discerning about whether you are that person. So, you know, I mean, I think that's great advice. You know, the enemy multiplying kisses, I think, is a great picture, as I said before, of flattery. And often, you know, I mean, flattery is an interesting thing because it's often associated with this idea of trying to get something. I want to make this person like me. And so I'm just going to flatter and flatter and flatter. And it's a different, flattery is different to encouraging. It's important that we encourage one another.
And I think we want to actually...
Flattery is something different to
that. No, that's right. And I think we actually want to look for those people, those trusted people.
Yeah.
And almost give them permission to speak into our lives rather than just hanging around with the people who, as you say, always tell us what we want to hear, because we don't grow from that.
Yeah.
In fact, we can find ourselves growing in the wrong direction if we keep getting told we're doing great, when in reality there are things that we need to address in our lives.
Yeah, that's right. There is, of course, Stu, a whole lot of material about conflict in the book of Proverbs. First of all, interesting array of proverbs on the causes of conflict. Hatred, of course, is to start with the obvious. Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers over all wrongs. And essentially what this is picturing, hatred stirs up. I know that's an obvious statement, but in a sense, conflict is the sort of situation that you don't want to find yourself in. You know, it's like a situation of conflict. And that hatred of something else, I think, draws the hater into a really toxic situation that's not only toxic for the person that you hate, but that's toxic for you. There are a few things more toxic for the human heart than hatred and bitterness.
Yeah.
And I know that's an obvious thing, but if you carry bitterness and hatred and malice towards a person, you've imbibed poison.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to infect your system. And so it's really important that you, and the flip side of this is love covering over all wrongs, is learning to love that person. That doesn't mean liking
the behavior,
the things that they do and what they, because remember, love is the recognition that this person is absolutely sacred, a sacred child of God, and learning to recognize that, okay, you may abhor the things that they're doing. There are all sorts of reasons why people do the things that they do, but hatred is going to punish you and them. It's going to make the, in every direction, the thing.
And it doesn't really create a path for reconciliation either, whereas love does. It creates a pathway to find common ground, to find reconciliation.
Yeah. One of the key causes of conflict between people is pride. And where there is strife, there is pride. Is, you know, it's saying, if there's strife there, just dig a bit, scratch below the surface, and you will soon find pride, right? I mean, that's just you know, recognize it, because that is profound. If there's, look at a situation where there's strife, you think of a situation of conflict, mm-hmm. you scratch below the surface and you will find yeah. pride, because it takes humility actually to back down and say, you know what, I am going to, you know, to show grace. Mm. I'm going to not insist on being in the right. Mm. I'm going to listen and assume that you may yeah. have a perspective exactly. that
help
I've
me understand
missed.
What I've missed here. Exactly yeah. right.
Dan. I mean, humility goes such a long way to.
Of course, the second half of that Proverbs 13:10 says, "But wisdom is found in those who take advice."
Yeah, that's right. So it's the willingness to listen
to others.
Yeah. Proverbs 15:18: A hot-tempered person stirs up conflict. So just being hot-tempered. You're letting yourself sort
like
of fly
that easily
off.
Angled,
yeah, yeah. It's the easily angered thing again. And, you know, learning to consider our responses, not just responding, feeling like we have a right to that reaction, because that immediate reaction is particularly in anger is never going to be, you know, it's never going to be constructive. Yeah. Like, pause long enough to consider your situation before you strike back. Just give yourself, you know, the hot tempered thing is always gonna make things go in the wrong. But one who is patient calms a quarrel. Mm. Okay, so just be patient. Listen. You might just find that it calms you down and calms the situation.
And often for people, it's just that they want to feel that they've been heard.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
You may end up coming to the position that you wanted to come to or felt was right, but giving the opportunity for another person to speak.
Yeah.
Proverbs 16:28, a perverse person stirs up conflict and a gossip separates close friends. Again, we've probably all experienced this, and I think it's probably one of the big challenges, particularly in church life, is we've all got an opinion about somebody else. And it's one of the things I've had to work really hard on over the years is, you know, if you've got an issue with a person, the first thing you should do is go and talk to that person.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And not be stirring up, you know, trying to get people on your side to argue your position. It's like, go speak to the person and get them to understand what that is.
Yeah, which comes back to the episode that we did, Stu, on speech and the things that we say, particularly whenever you find yourself talking about another person when they're not there. Mm. It's not to say that you can't do that, but be very, very careful about that. As it says in Proverbs 18:6, the lips of fools bring them strife and their mouths invite a beating. There is this, you know, lack of discipline in the what you say can bring a lot of strife. And then, Stu, Proverbs 22:10, drive out the mocker and out goes strife. Quarrels and insults are ended. Now the mocker, what is it talking about? You know, mockery is the cynical person that just pays everyone out all the time.
And it's personal.
Yeah, that's right.
What would they know?
Stu, I think this is a bit of a Aussie cultural thing. I think that sort of cynical, you know, being cynical about everything, that can be a real problem. I mean, getting rid of that. I always say, you know, cynicism rarely will get to the truth. You'll never get to the truths through cynicism. It feels like you are. It's like just being cynic, because it's this sort of suspicion. And I think mockery goes a step further. Mockery is just, you know, what we would say, just paying out everyone. And it really is. It's a dishonoring thing. And so even in jest, actually, I think we need to watch out that we're still.
Respectful.
You know, yeah, that's right. You can, I mean, you know, again, it's Aussies, you know, love a good sledging, and that's fine, but we just got to be
fine,
careful.
Cricket, but
we've got to be careful that that's also not taken
too far.
Goes
on in Proverbs 29:8 and says, mockers stir up a city, but the wise turn away anger. And again, this is about mockers then kind of stirring up the crowd in a sense to, you know, come against whoever it is that they're mocking, you know, that whole sense of safety in numbers and, you know, but the wise turn away anger.
Yeah. And then Proverbs 28, greed. It's what can I get out of this? Again, in the same way, scratch below the surface, you'll find pride. Scratch a bit more below the surface and you'll probably find greed in something like selfishness, essentially, is another way you could put that.
Yeah.
You'll find that there as well. Proverbs 30, if you play the fool and exalt yourself, or if you plan evil, clap your hand over your mouth. For as churning cream produces butter and as twisting the nose produces blood, so stirring up anger produces strife.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Just be really careful that you're not looking to stir up anger. Sometimes we can subtly try to punish a person by making them angry and then sort of throwing up our hands and, there, see you go, you know, there you go. Again, we want to be people who sow peace, not stirring up anger, but creating peace. Now, again, this is where the Proverbs do this, you know, where you have seemingly contradictory Proverbs, because you might say, well, I'm not going to be truthful with this friend. You know, maybe I should actually be truthful and honest because I don't want to stir up anger. I don't want to make them angry. And so you get the avoidance thing.
Yeah.
So again, this is the wisdom thing. This is where wisdom, it's not like there are rules here. There's a time
and a context.
The right time and context to speak and the right way to say that. But then there are also times where it's like, you know what? I'm going to let this go.
Yeah.
There's a moment for that as well, because it's just pointless to stir up anger at this particular point.
And so often we want to be right just so that we're right. It actually doesn't matter. And letting something go, as you say, is by far the most wise option to take.
Yeah. A famous proverb, Proverbs 27 verse 17 is, iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. And I think, you know, this is a bit of a motto over all of these sorts of things, because situations, relationships, and particularly conflicts within relationships, which are inevitable because we're all imperfect. So conflict is inevitable. Mm. I think it's important to recognize if there's conflict, doesn't mean there's something wrong with your relationship. It just means that people are imperfect in different ways, right? Yep. So conflict is inevitable. It's all about how you work through that conflict, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And in fact, working through conflict sharpens, two people sharpen one another. By working through conflict, not by avoiding conflict.
Not by running away from
That's
it.
That's right.
Exactly.
And it's actually the fact that these things come to the surface in relationships, particularly close relationships. The closer a relationship is, the more it'll bring out both your best and your worst.
Yes.
And the more the other person will see the worst in you. And because you're more relaxed and vulnerable and, in a sense, disarmed, the more the worst will come out of each of you, right? So often the best relationships can actually be the most conflicted as well, because this stuff is coming out, right? But this is part of the iron sharpens iron, right? Because we need to see those things about ourselves, you know. We need to see the worst in ourselves so that those things can be addressed and we can file off the rough edges somewhat. Mm. And we are each other's files. That's the sort of, you know, iron sharpening iron. Yes. It's talking about sharpening a blade.
Yes,
with another piece of steel, right?
One
blade sharpening another blade, right? And that's, I think, a really important picture of relationships there in the Proverbs.
And the thing is, it's difficult for us to be able to accept that. I mean, even in our closest relationships where we should have the highest level of trust, at the same time, that's where it sometimes hurts the most, because we really care about what that person thinks. But that's where we've got to work even that much harder to take that on and go, what am I needing to hear here in my situation?
That's right. Yeah. And so that's constructive conflict.
Yeah.
And it's important to realize conflict can be constructive. Like, okay, first of all, conflict is inevitable.
Yep.
So it's either going to be constructive or destructive. And Proverbs 17 verse 1 talks about a situation where conflict is destructive in the sense that it creates a sort of destructive environment.
Yeah.
creates essentially a kind of toxic environment. So Proverbs 17, 1, better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. Mm. A house of strife. You know, so this is the importance of our relationships, because we live with our closest relationships. Your home is your relationships. You know, it's not just your place. Mm. It's the people. It's your relationships. And in the same way as we build a house to live in, a physical house, you also build relationships to live in, right? And if you build, well, you can go in with a sledgehammer and destroy your own house and bring it down on your own head. And that is this picture of, your house might be full of feasting, there might be plenty of, but it's going to be miserable if your relationships are always fraught with unresolved conflict, right? Conflict that isn't worked through constructively. Mm. So it's not about avoidance, because avoidance can be equally
destructive.
In fact, I have been reading a book at the moment that is citing all of this research that says, you know, people who are seen as being fairly
suppressing things.
Yeah, suppressing.
Yep.
And are often really nice people. They're nice to everyone all the time. often those people can be suppressing a lot of hurt. Mm-hmm. And they're seen to be making peace, but in fact, and often they suffer a lot of, you know, I think it was talking about like even illnesses and, you know, amongst people.
Because they're bottling it all up.
Because they're bottling up so much stuff from it. And so, yeah, the thing of two people just never talking about, you know, not bringing up situations of conflict, man, that can be a really, really unhealthy circumstance. So that can be essentially quite a toxic house, even though it seems like everything's going well.
Yeah.
Avoidance can be equally toxic, essentially.
It's, you know, Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the peace makers, not the peace
keepers. Yeah, that's correct.
There's a very significant difference between those two things. A peacemaker is someone who's willing to hear all of these issues and find a way forward.
Yeah.
Peacekeeper is someone who just doesn't want to hear them to keep the peace.
Yeah, that's right.
Totally.
There's a sense here that while conflict is inevitable, quarrels are unnecessary. Quarreling is that sort of pejorative term. It's the word for what essentially isn't real communication.
Yeah.
If you're quarreling, you're not really communicating. And you can communicate passionately. You can communicate, you know, your hurts and what you're angry about. Communication is essentially you communicating how you feel, not accusing the other person. It's essentially explaining to the other person the effect that their action has had on you.
How it makes you feel.
But two people who you always do this and you're that, that just becomes attack. And then that invites defense. And attack and defense is a quarrel. And I was speaking to a couple once that were experiencing a lot of quarreling in their relationship. And I said, so, you know, how do you feel that you guys are going with your communication? Oh, they said, yeah, we communicate lots, mostly yelling and pointing fingers. Okay, I said, okay, let's just go back to the basics. That actually isn't communication. Yeah. Attack and defense is quarreling, right? Yeah. And quarreling actually doesn't really count for communication. You've got to get to the point where you stop quarreling and actually start communicating.
Yeah,
and because what, you know, quarrels, attack and defense, and eventually there are slam doors and it all just breaks down. But it doesn't really ever do something, anything constructive. So there's a lot of Proverbs actually about quarreling.
Proverbs 17:19 kind of speaks to what you just said then. Yep. Whoever loves a quarrel loves sin, but whoever builds a high gate, or not but, whoever builds a high gate invites destruction. In other words, if you're not willing, if you're just going to shut up and kind of shut the gate up and push everyone away, then you're not going to be able to communicate. You're just going to be basically shouting over the gate at the other person.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I joked once, you know, someone asked us when we were doing, Kate and I, and this is going back years now, we used to do a lot of pre-marriage stuff with couples, and it was great. It was great for our marriage talking about other, you know, talking with other people. And we had lots of
quarrels afterwards. Yeah.
we just had so many laughs, and it was just great. And people said, do you guys argue much? And I said, well, Kate does, I don't.
Which, of course, started an argument.
Of course, it takes two. That's the thing, an argument. Well, but see, not entering into it, you know, just not, I'm not going to, often you can feel like the self-righteous one. I'm not going to, you know, no, I'm not even going to have this conversation, shutting a conversation down. I've seen, you know, people explain this to me. Oh, no, as soon as I just shut it down. I just walk away, right? As soon as this topic comes up, I just walk out of the room. It's like, no, that's the high gate. If you build a high gate and if you shut the door, you are inviting a war. I mean, that defensiveness.
Yeah.
Remember, relationships are built on communication, and communication is not attack or defense. All right, so defense, no, I'm not even going to talk about it, is as destructive as the person that wants to point the finger and accuse. So I think really important principle there. There's, I don't know if you noticed this, Stu, but there's all of these proverbs about the quarrelsome wife. And I think this is clearly written by a man for a start.
With too many wives, actually.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a bit of wisdom. Maybe just have one wife. You know, better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and nagging wife. Better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife.
Quarrelsome wife is like the dripping of a leaky roof in a rainstorm.
Oh, okay, let's just be clear that a quarrelsome husband is just the same. Exactly these are right. Paradigmatic. They're not trying specific. To be sexist. It's no. just saying the great question to ask yourself is what kind of partner am I? Kind of partner. What am I like to live with? That's a really good question.
Yeah, totally.
What do you like to live with?
And I think it's important to say that we can't answer that.
That's a ourselves. Good one. Yeah, yeah.
We have to listen to how the other person sees what we're like to live with.
Exactly.
Because we might think we're wonderful to live with.
And again, this comes back to the willingness to be truthful and to receive the wound from the friend.
Yes.
That question, what am I actually like to live with? Mm. It's really good just to reflect on that. And I think the best way, particularly for couples, to reflect on that. I'm a big believer in marriage pit stops, like go talk to someone. And this is not what you do when you have problems and you feel like it's coming to the end. Or I think to do a bit of a marriage pit stop and sit with someone that can do a bit of a health check for your relationship.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in that. Do like a marriage, like the Alpha Marriage Course or something like that.
Totally.
That actually causes you to reflect, intentionally reflect, how are we going as a couple? Yeah. Right?
Because you can get so busy in life.
Yeah.
And then wonder why nothing's getting any better.
Yeah.
It's because you just haven't stopped for a second. As you say, a pit stop's a great word to use.
Because it could be that things seem peaceful, but maybe
there's stuff
just
brewing.
You're both avoiding quarrels, right? And you're both just essentially, so there's no communication happening in the relationship. Well, that's not good. So sometimes those sort of occasions can bring things to the surface and
get
you communicating
again. Which is important and a good thing. Exactly right. People, when I hear people say, you know, have been married for a long time, it just came out of nowhere. I kind of go, in a marriage relationship, it can't come out of nowhere. You know, you just can't. Then that's where you need to be willing to, as you say, take those pit stops and ask those questions.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. There's a bit of advice here on how to avoid strife, Stu. Proverbs 17 verse 14, starting a quarrel is like breaching a dam. So drop the matter before a dispute breaks out.
Yeah.
Again, it's not saying don't communicate.
It's a quarrel.
It's the quarrel. And this is often, it's often the little things. Do you really need to, you know.
Is it important that you're right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So just careful, because the picture here is that little thing that breaches the dam. It's the little thing that... that causes a big effect. So you just got to ask the question, is this really...
And the number of times I've found myself necessary. Over our married life where you kind of go, I can't remember what it was we were arguing about now. So it just shows you how unimportant whatever it was. That was a quarrel. And it's like, we're angry at each other, but actually neither of us can remember what it was about, you know?
Yeah.
That says that's something we should have dropped right at the start. The one I really like, there's Proverbs 26:20, where the outward a fire goes out.
Yeah, that's a great
without
one.
Without a gossip, a quarrel dies down. In other words, don't feed.
Yeah.
The situation,
yeah.
You know, if there is negative talk going on, don't get in and lump wood on the fire and stoke it up. And
that's right. So if someone talks to you about a dispute that they have with another person, sometimes the worst. Well, I mean, I think you need to listen and empathize with that person, but sometimes that can spill into just a kind of criticize fest. Oh, yeah, aren't they terrible? I can't believe, you know, how could they do that?
And what were they thinking?
Yeah. That's right. So just be careful that you're not throwing wood on the bitterness fire, the anger fire.
And what were they thinking? That's the question you need to ask them.
Yeah, that's
right. And we don't do that enough. We should go to them and say, hey, look, help me understand what you were thinking when this happened or you know, what have I missed? And I think we just jump to our own conclusions. And as I've said before, when we were doing the episode on words, we're really good at saying all of those things. And then when we discover we actually got it wrong, we're not so good at going back to all the other people we talk to and actually saying, you know what, I was wrong actually. That's not what they meant.
Yeah.
You know, we never get to do that. And the damage is done.
That's right. Yeah. The famous proverb, Stu, that's quoted in Romans 12, actually, if your enemy is hungry, give him some food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head and the Lord will reward you.
That's a bit of an interesting one, I thought. It's like if someone's kind of, I mean, I understand if your enemy is hungry, give him food. But do we want to heap coals on his head? I see what it's saying here. In a sense, we don't give the enemy the opportunity to point the finger at us because we're just doing all we can to support them. But
it means that essentially they are stuck with the bitterness, that we're not being infected
by the enemy.
It. That's right. Yeah. By, in a sense, by repaying with kindness, it actually shows up the bitterness and the anger. And I think the burning coals here is, I mean, it's always associated with sort of purging. Burning coals have this purging effect, you know, and the heaping burning coals on the head essentially is the purging of the hatred, you know, there, I think. So there's a sense here that kindness has this purifying effect. You know, I mean, it can, you know, it's like the famous story of Les Miserables, you know, with the Jean Valjean, where he steals the articles, the silver articles from the priest, you know, and the priest, when he's caught, you know, the priest says, "Oh no, I gave them to him," and it heaps burning coals in his, because he's conscience stricken, right?
Yes.
Because of that. And so I think the burning coals here also refer to the conscience as well. Like, you
brings to the surface those things.
Yeah. Like if you hate a person that's hating you, it just goes bing, ping pongs back and forth, right? But if you show kindness, they're actually quite likely to be conscience stricken about their attitude. Mm. And that act of kindness is going to, again, bring the infection to the surface and cause their conscience to awaken. They're going to feel the pain of their own bitterness. And so I think that's the burning coals here stand for that as well.
And again, it's just not something we do intuitively, though, is it?
No, that's right.
We've just got to work on these things.
Yeah.
Family, Matt, you talked a bit before about honouring our parents. And as you said, a number of times through scripture, it talks about the importance of honouring our parents. And I think about that, you know, it talks about that it will go well for you. I mean, let's remember our children observe how we treat our parents.
Yeah.
And we're their parents.
That is a really good point.
So there's something in there.
Proverbs 20, verse 20, if someone curses their father or mother, their lamp will be snuffed out in pitch darkness. The family lamp is a bit of a, you know, you pass the lamp down in the family. It's this sense of, if you curse your parents, you're snuffing out your own lamp. Or another way that I've heard this put is you're poisoning your own roots.
Yeah.
You know, if to have bitterness towards your parents or unforgiveness toward parents is essentially to poison your own roots.
Yeah.
And you don't grow as a result.
Mm. And I can say, you know, I do a bit of work for funerals, for instance, and so often dysfunctional families, it's so sad to see it at a point where people are grieving the loss of a parent.
Yeah.
And just to see different sides of the family who have fallen out, and you go, life's too short for this. We really need to find ways that we can honor. And that doesn't mean that our parents necessarily have always been the perfect parents, but we're not being the perfect kids either.
Yeah.
And we need to find the way to be able to honor even in those dysfunctional relationships.
Yeah. And I think honoring parents is also that there are things that we can do that either bring grief or joy to our parents. So Proverbs 17:25, a foolish son brings grief to his father and bitterness to the mother who bore him. You know, children can cause, at any age, can cause great suffering and concern to their parents, and can act in ways, you know, that do that. So the, oh, it's my life, I can live it however I want. Well, yeah, but our actions affect other people, particularly those closest to us.
Yeah.
And we just need to be mindful of that. There's also a lot in the Proverbs about being willing to draw on the wisdom of those older than us. Mm. It's a, you know, important thing, particularly in our culture, Stu, which we tend to honor and lift up young people with the energy and the fresh ideas.
Yeah, what would the old guys know?
Yeah, we tend to, it's quite common in our culture, actually, for older people to feel invisible, to feel, you know, to feel like their time is done. They're past their use by date. They're no use, you know, they're insignificant. Mm. Man, that's a real pity, because in cultures like this, it was recognized that older people carry the wisdom of years, a wisdom that can only be gained with years.
Yeah.
And we need to really honor that, particularly, I think, in the church, actually. And of course, we need to be focusing on the next generation and so forth. But older people in our congregations, they carry so much that's needed in the life of a church. So while we want to be focused on the next generation, the future of the church, what resides in the older people is the thing that needs to be passed on to the next generation.
Yes.
And so older people engaging in ministry is absolutely vital for a healthy church. Not saying, oh, I'll leave it to the young ones. Please don't say, I'll leave it all to the young ones because you have something, you've got a treasure chest of wisdom to pass on to younger people.
And for the younger people, we need to recognize that as well, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And listen to as we've just talked about, you know, listening to the others who are wiser than us and have had more experience than us before we just decide to go ahead and do it anyway. Yeah.
So Proverbs 23 verse 22, listen to your father who gave you life, do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Wisdom, instruction, and insight as well. The father of a righteous child has great joy. A man who fathers a wise son rejoices in him. And this is not just biological fathers. Yeah. This is the mothers and fathers of the church, right? Yep. Because we are a faith family.
Yes.
And listening to those older than us, I think is so important.
And I love the way it uses the word buy, because essentially I think what that's saying to us is be willing to pay the cost of getting that truth and that wisdom and that instruction and that insight. There's a cost to that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It might be time. It might be listening. It might be asking questions. It, in a sense, go to whatever length you need to go to get that truth and to get that wisdom and to get that insight. Yeah.
And then finally, Stu, of course, there's a lot about parenting and some classic stuff. And famously, I mean, this is an interesting one in the context of our culture. Proverbs 13:24, well-known proverb, whoever spares the rod hates their children. And the other one is spare the rod, spoil the child. Discipline your children and they will give you peace. They will bring you the delights you desire. A rod and a reprimand impart wisdom, but a child left undisciplined disgraces his mother. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish them with the rod, they will not die. Punish them with the rod and save them from death. In our culture, this is perhaps controversial. Largely because of the abuse of this, and let's just recognize this, these are things that have been abused, and it's the situations, and too often these verses have been misused to justify essentially lashing out in anger at children and expressing frustration upon children. That's not what discipline is about. You know, that can actually do a lot of damage. And so the rod here, let's just be flexible about what that means. I don't think we want to really talk about physical discipline here as such. And, you know, different parents have different approaches to discipline. The point here is discipline itself is necessary, that children need to be guided. Guide a child in the way it should go, and it will not depart. Whereas
Proverbs 22:6, start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it.
That's right. So that's the spirit of, that's what discipline is. It's about setting boundaries.
And can I suggest discipline cannot be administered in anger?
Yeah, that's right.
Because discipline is a bit like disciple. It's like showing people a better way, and you can't do that if it's just a reaction out of anger.
Yeah.
You do that by actually speaking to the child, and there may be a punishment of some kind, you know, whether it's confined to a room or you can't have access to this or whatever that discipline might be.
Getting angry as such is a natural response. I mean, the Bible even talks about God being angry, you know. So that in itself is not a problem. It's not even a problem your children knowing that you're angry. The difference is it's not about satisfying you. It's about what's good for them. Discipline, you know, I mean, the Lord disciplines those he loves.
Yes.
And as it says in Hebrews, and that's, of course, a quote, you know, that theme of discipline for the benefit. It's discipline for a benefit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's about setting clear boundaries. It's putting the fence along the side of the road, saying, here is the way that you should go. Don't step over this. And you know, children learn to associate bad behavior with bad consequences. I think that's the lesson. And, you know, eventually there comes a point where they imbibe that lesson if you touch a hot stove, you get burnt.
Yes.
And the discipline of consequences, you know, recognizing that there are consequences for our actions, you know, is part of learning to become a responsible human being.
Totally.
Really.
And there are consequences for all of the choices that we make in life, even as an adult.
That's right.
Whether as children or not. It goes on then, there's some blessing here. Matt, you know, moving on from that, 17:6, children are a crown to the aged and parents are the pride of their children.
Yeah.
So that whole sense of, you know, being able to look at our children whom have hopefully grown to honour us and respect us is incredible.
Yeah. It's interesting overall in summary, Stu, of, you know, all of these elements in relationships is, first of all, how important relationships are. This presumes a very close-knit society and a society that if it's torn apart, you know, families, particularly in traditional societies, were the core of day-to-day life. They were, you know, this is tribal societies particularly. So if there's discord in a family, discord in a clan, there's discord in a tribe. You know, you go family, clan, tribe. Clan is your wider family, and then your tribe is in these ancient cultures. And I think we can learn from that, because when our relationships go wrong, our closest relationships, it never only affects us. A lot of people get affected by broken relationships. And we need to remember too, when we become Christians, we become a part of a church. And the health of your relationships isn't just good for you, it's vital for the church. It's vital for the cohesion of the body of Christ that we maintain good relationships. And so all of these proverbs that talk about relationships, that talk that cautious against quarreling, right? That encourage us to have constructive conflict, to communicate well, to be really careful with how we speak about one another. This is about keeping a cohesive family, essentially. And this is the sort of unity, you know, throughout the New Testament, there are continual exhortations to do whatever it takes to keep the unity of brothers and sisters. That doesn't mean avoiding conflict. It means working through conflict well and building strong relationships. We are only as healthy as our relationships are healthy. So yes, immediately the health of your relationships will affect your health in many different respects. But it also is directly connected with the health of the community. So your relationships and the health of our relationships, important for you. You live in the house that you build, but also they're important for all of the people around you. And good relationships will have multi-generational effect, positive effect. Bad relationships will also have multi-generational effect. So all to say, whatever it takes, building good, strong relationships should be the priority of life, which is coming back to the first commandment, isn't it? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbour as yourself.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Thrive Deeper. Our home on the internet is thrivetoday.tv. You can contact us, ask questions, see all our resources and much more at our website, thrivetoday.tv. We really appreciate the questions and thoughts about what you're reading as we go through the Bible with Thrive. Until next time, our prayer is that these shows will inspire you to go deeper and thrive.